the
And you're on. Okay. Do you want to play the audio?
I think I'll go over welcome stuff. Okay. Welcome to Moss Radio. You're listening to mossradio.com. We are your local online community radio, prioritizing and practicing engagement with each other, listeners, participants, and communities. Moss Radio streams at select hours, changing every week, and you can find our programming and exact hours on the schedule page of our website. Feel free to contact us through email, mossradio@proton.me, at mossradio.nyc on Instagram. You can text us at 917-809-4084, and please feel free to chat on the website. Right now you're listening to Grasping Things at the Roots. My name is DJ Sasa. I've also got Boots here and DJ Croak.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yo.
Before introducing all of us, I'm going to play a recording from a poet named June Jordan. And the poem is called I Must Become a Menace to My Enemies.
So let's just mute ourselves while that happens.
Okay.
The poem is called I Must Become a Menace to My Enemies, and is dedicated to the poet Agostinho Neto, who is the president of the People's Republic of Angola. I will no longer lightly walk behind a one of you who fear me. Be afraid. I plan to give you reasons for your jumpy fits and facial tics. I will not walk politely on the pavements anymore. And this is dedicated in particular to those who hear my footsteps or the insubstantial rattling of my grocery cart, then turn around, see me, and hurry on away from this impressive terror I must be. I plan to blossom bloody on an afternoon surrounded by my comrades singing terrible revenge in merciless accelerating rhythms, but I have watched a blind man studying his face. I have set the table in the evening and sat down to eat the news. Regularly, I have gone to sleep. There is no one to forgive me. The dead do not give a damn. I live like a lover who drops her dime into the phone just as the subway shakes into the station, wasting her message, canceling the question of her call. Fulminating or forgetful, but late. And always after the fact that could save or condemn me, I must become the action of my fate. How many of my brothers and my sisters will they kill before I teach myself retaliation? Shall we pick a number? South Africa, for instance, do we agree that more than 10,000 in less than a year, but that less than 5,000 slaughtered in more than 6 months? Well, what is the matter with me? I must become a menace to my enemies, and if I ever let you slide, who should be extirpated from my universe, who should be cauterized from Earth completely, law and order jerk-offs of the first, the terrorist degree, then let my body fail my soul in its bedeviled lecheries, and if I ever let love go, because the hatred and the whisperings become a phantom dictate, I'll obey in lieu of impulse and realities, the blossoming flamingos of my wild mimosa trees, then let love freeze me out. I must become a menace to my enemies.
All right.
So that was June Jordan reading I Must Become a Menace to My Enemies. And I kind of wanted to start this, like, first broadcast of Grasping Things at the Root with her words, because I kind of find, like, her as an activist and also as a writer to be a waypoint for, like, how, like, Grasping Things at the Roots can go. And a little bit about June Jordan. She was a Black feminist poet and activist born in Harlem in 1936. And she began publishing her works primarily in the 70s with themes directly pulled from her experiences as a queer Black woman and also just observations of America at the time. So that poem is just literally just like a drop in the huge ocean of works that she has produced since her passing, I think, which is in like 2005. But yeah, I mean, there's something really resonant about like the way that she like reads her own poetry, and the way that she like combines what she notices about like the world, what she notices against like violence that's being enacted against her community. And yeah, I think the beautiful thing about June Jordan is that she was able to like speak about the Vietnam War, like in the same breath as the struggle for civil rights, and like the struggle against police brutality happening in New York and just in America. And she would also write about like her lovers and the love and grief she felt for her community in the same poem, in the same stanza as like calling for a free Palestine. So it's like unfortunate that now she's kind of considered like a radical poet, because a lot of her words are just like super real. Like they resonate deeply with me. They resonate deeply with a lot of my friends. And like this poem has been quoted so much like in my time as like an organizer, just like in community, and like also just like educating about whether it's like poetry, art, or activism. Like her poems come up a lot. So yeah, that was my spiel on June Jordan.
No, it's cool. I did not know this person.
I love her. I've been going through like her collection of poems called Directed by Desire, which is like, it's a really thick book because she's written a lot. But there's this, but yeah, actually, before I keep going on and on, we can also introduce ourselves as DJs and hosts of this show. Yeah, so I kind of didn't prepare an introduction to myself, I'm realizing. My name is Sasa. I'm kind of just a guy, and I'm an artist. I work in some nonprofits that are centered around like education and art, with themes like about like anti-gentrification and like anti-capitalism, and also like prison abolition, primarily in Chinatown and the Lower East Side. So that's kind of where my like experience comes from. But yeah, I think like I'll talk a little bit more about that later, but Boots, if you want to introduce yourself, my very good friend.
Word. I also did not, I'm also just a guy. my name is Boots. My pronouns are he, they. I was really looking forward to this this week, because it just feels like a nice like bookend to the week, you know? I also just like ate like a really good dinner, so I made some salmon,
okay,
like za'atar on it, tzatziki, I was really looking forward to this, just to ground ourselves in like poetry, the end of the week, and June Jordan. I really love this person, and I guess that's part of my bio. But yeah, thanks for having me, y'all.
Of course.
Yeah.
I'm DJ Croak. I use he, him. I'd say I come from a background more of like definitely harm reduction work, which I've spoken about on this radio a bit, and like care work, and also like got to acknowledge like the social work part of that, and like what it's meant to study that as a field and be entering that. But yeah, mostly kind of just like in social work, in a way that like I'm learning how to communicate and like enter and like work in, you know, agencies and stuff like that, but in a way that I really want to stay in like a community level and make sure I'm like, yeah, you know, following like liberatory harm reduction principles and like prioritizing and centering community care. So I'm also looking forward to this broadcast, and today's been a nice day of like really thinking about care and what that means. So especially like bring this to a community level. It's mm-hmm. nice. Mm-hmm. So thank you for doing this.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm. And I was tuning into the roundtable earlier, and it was like all stuff that I also wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I was like, this is awesome. Like, there's so many like through lines happening for already sure. Across like all the different like hosts and DJs and stuff. But yeah.
Let's get into it.
Yeah, let's get into it. So I think to say a little bit more about like what exactly this conversation encapsulates, basically like wanting to highlight like the thoughts of loved ones and like friends and community members, and not just like as people that represent institutions mm-hmm. or organizations or like affinity groups or anything, but actually how like they as individuals and in like the community that they're in, like how they sustain the work that they do. Mm-hmm. So not like speaking as though like they're a representative of like their organization, but like how they themselves work to keep themselves like doing what they do, if that makes sense. Yeah, I think we were also talking before about how like these broadcasts are not being archived, which mm-hmm. I actually like really like this kind of like temporal part of it.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think there's something awesome about that. But
yeah, I think it is, and like I've thought a lot about, you know, whether we should archive our things on the website, and I think it comes down to like right now we're at a point where let me turn it not to stare on. But I think we're at a point where like we're really trying to intentionally build community, and part of that is like being mm-hmm. listening at the same time as somebody to something, and like being able to say, you know, like I was in that, and being able to like engage in the chat if you want to and call in if you want to. Yeah, I don't know. I think there's time to develop our content in a way that like will be necessary and important mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. archive. And I think right now it's definitely more like, let's start with the yeah. conversations and like yeah. make sure the homies are listening mm-hmm. and, you know, build our knowledge a bit and then really get to mm-hmm. the work. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, just to add on to that, I also really love that this isn't sort of like immediately archived or recorded. I think so much about our ability to listen has been really like, you know, it's been made like a convenience or something that does not really require presence, you know, like so much of our like digital tools. Even though like we are actively using digital tools right now, I'm not in the same space as y'all, we're speaking, but there's something about listening in real time, and yeah,
amazing. I mean, I can speak for myself with saying that this is my first experience like being on radio or like in like a public broadcasting sphere. Which is like really awesome, and
no, I'm excited to like, I don't know, this as since like the first week of launch and stuff, I'm excited about the ways that this has already kind of been serving as like, you know, connecting to these like community organizations that I didn't necessarily know about, but that other people on the team knew about mm-hmm. and reposted their events and highlighted their events for them in the dispatch, and now, you know, having these different people be able to kind of be a part of it and listen in. And at the same time, I think, yeah, just like having friends, you know, be like on the broadcast and be like, this is a really interesting conversation. And like mm-hmm. that already is enough, you know. That's why like, I don't like putting up the listener count, because mm-hmm. I don't think it matters. You know, it's really just like, we about to do this anyways. So.
Yeah. I think before, this was something that I was like eavesdropping on in the conversation before during the roundtable, but like, about like critical connections over like critical mass. And I think, and I love like Adrienne Marie Brown and like mm-hmm. her writing and like the work she does as a facilitator and like the skills that she shares through Emergent Strategy, that book. But I think like what's happening here is like awesome, because there's so many critical connections like being built between like all these overlapping mm-hmm. relationships, So it's really like beautiful to witness and contribute to.
Thank you.
Yeah. I did have like a kind of intense like kickoff question.
Okay, please.
No, yeah.
You guys are good.
The questions are yeah.
Okay, so another June Jordan poem that I wanted to like bring into the room with us is called Poem Calling on All Silent Minorities. And it's pretty short, and I'm just gonna read it, not in her beautiful voice, but it goes like, "Hey, come on, come out, wherever you are. We need to have this meeting at this tree. Ain't even been planted yet." Yeah. So that's like one of my favorite poems ever. And Boots, I know that you like want to get this tattooed at some point.
Like literally.
Yeah. And like, yeah.
Wait, can I get that again, actually?
Yeah, the poem? Yeah. "Hey, come on, come out, wherever you are. We need to have this meeting at this tree. Ain't even been planted yet."
I like that, yeah.
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 Yeah. Can I ask why y'all, like, what is the reason y'all are resonating with this so much?
Yeah. I mean, Boots, if you want to talk first.
Yeah, no, I love this poem down. I think the tone of it is such like an imperative. I really love that. It also has simultaneously like a sense of urgency to it, but also already built in like a future tense. Like the poem that you read before this one, Sauce, is like, so like the tenses of her poems are really interesting because there's always like a future tense involved. And I know that's not like a unique trait for a poem, but there's something that I really love about Jordan's voice. It's an imperative. It's also like an invitation, you know? Yeah, I think asking folks to meet at a tree that's not even there yet is like so beautiful, and I think, you know, it grounds me a lot. It's like quite a compass.
I think there's also a lot of intimacy in it, you know. Kind of this sense of like, we have to do this, and like, yeah, like gather around this thing that's like not even there yet, which I feel like is what we're doing like so often. And we were talking about it in the earlier broadcast of, you know, like not having all the answers for things like prison abolition or abolition in general, and kind of, yeah, being in this state of like, let's still gather, and like we have to, and we have to be together for this and watch something grow from like nothing, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I think like it kind of really holds the feeling of what it means to be like organizing. Because like the outcomes of like organizing and like even like cultural work are not even like tangible until like who knows when. And you might not even see like the effects of like what you're doing, and like it also like doesn't even matter, because like it's about you planting a seed with people and just literally taking that initiative to like grow. And like what you're saying, like, yeah, there's a lot of intimacy in it, and that's another thing about her writing, is that like she's able to like write so personally and vulnerably and like intimately with the person that's like reading her poems, and it feels like there's so much desire like behind her like observations and her like kind of journalism as a poet. But yeah. So like presenting that poem to y'all, I had like a question about like what that tree might mean to us and what it looks like in our lives. And it can be like a hope and dream of what that tree is, or like what we're actively doing. But like, how this might show up like in our lives as like artists, or like organizers, or literally just like people in New York. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think for me, I'm like thinking about the web we're talking about, or like that we've been talking about since the beginning of like even this, you know, like the radio is such a kind of like an effort to watch that tree grow from nothing, in the sense of like, yeah, to me, it's just not even just the radio, but even in life and through personal life and professional life as well, kind of like building these webs and this like big web that interconnects everybody and is able to like, yeah, support us and, you know, have like people that you can call because they're friends of friends of friends, mm-hmm. but they still know that you're in this network. Yeah, I don't know. I think a lot about the New York Youth Mutual Aid Network that was mm-hmm. in the city like around 2020, and how that was really this like large network of like 150 people or something that could respond to each other's like mutual aid requests and take care of each other when they were out on the streets. And that was like really, yeah, built from not nothing, but I think built from like survival. And that's also like that in the sense, like the tree and like growing everything is also just like what brings us there, you know, and like how much is it need versus like desire to like, and that's the what the poem is saying, right? Like we need to do this. It's not just like we want to get together and like become friends. It's this is how we sustain ourselves. Yeah. And like, yeah, really just like watching, like in, I'm visualizing more as like, you know, those trees that have the like dripping branches or roots, dripping roots.
Outside of
the tree, you know, and then like that creates another tree that then connects years later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thinking about that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that I wholeheartedly agree. Like, I think that poem is such a good, like, allegory to, like, organizing, especially calling out its time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that carving out what freedom and flourishing looks like to us is, like, really, as Sasa said, like, really intangible. And something about that poem, it says a lot of things and it has a lot of wisdom. And one of them is sort of just like how Jordan sees organizing as notions of assembly, but also like how to hold each other through different stakes, I feel like. Like just, yeah, I think I'm brought a lot to like faith when I think about that poem.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's really beautiful to like think about the different ways that it reflects like in everybody who like hears or mm-hmm. reads the poem. And it honestly came to me through my work at the WOW Project and through like a teaching artist who was teaching about like poetry and how it's like actually a really like quote unquote like radical thing to like incorporate like into like your work as an educator or mm-hmm. as like an activist or as an organizer, because it brings like it brings to front like the actual reason like why you're doing all of this, and wait, I totally forgot what I was gonna say.
No, but you're making sense though. I'm following.
Yeah, I think it makes me think about, kind of unrelated, but, like, mm-hmm. I listen to a lot of rap, and mm-hmm. there's this one rapper, Gael Faye, or I guess he's a rapper and, like, spoken word person, or, like, slam, let's mm-hmm. say, and raps a lot about the genocide in Rwanda that happened,
mm-hmm.
Because he's Rwandan himself, and writes about it not, you know, because it's happened, you know, it's obviously it's education, mm-hmm. but it's mostly just this like really deep personal reflection on like what it means to, for example, like be French as well and consider yourself like French and Rwandan, right? Mm-hmm. Or like what it means to have grown up with this like Hutu-Tutsi like division and kind of like getting you know, like literally writing about how, like, let's get rid of this division and we have to think differently and we have to like remember our history and also write about it. And I did actually a spoken word workshop with him. And it was super interesting to like see the process of, you know, somebody that's really trying to like write to say something about history and about like even like the current state of like relations between countries or the current state of like, you know, survivors and people who have been like traumatized by that event. Yeah, I don't know, just thinking about all that and like the ways in which like, you know, we can really use sound and rhythm and rhyme to make something clear that maybe like people wouldn't seek out the content themselves if it wasn't through this format, you know.
I mean, rap is
totally yeah, go ahead. No, you're good.
Rap is like poetry and I mean, like, I'm also thinking about, because I'm like, honestly, this is very vulnerable to say, but I'm like a big country fan.
Me too.
Whoa.
So we, I think we like literally
won. I am a truth comes out.
Like, yeah. Every person that I tell this to, they have the craziest reaction.
Yeah.
But I'm like, no, like there is like some super important work that like country artists, I mean specific ones do. Some of them I'm like a little bit like, okay, bro. But
even, you know, like Vincent Neil Emerson. And how I've seen like interviews of him talking about, for example, like his grandmother was the, I believe, a chief in a tribe. And like he talks a lot about how like even country music was indigenous music at first and how it comes from that and how like you can't forget about the roots and stuff, you know, and like like this like white country guy at first you wouldn't think about it, but you know, is actually like talking about these things and talking about like the history of the music as also like black music and all these things.
I'm thinking also, because I think like this year I saw Rhiannon Giddens, because she came to New York, but she's like a black banjo player. She's black and Irish. And like, hell yeah, let's go Irish people. but she, a lot of her music is like in, like she collaborates with a lot of different like black country artists. And also for this show that she did in New York, she was collaborating with like Chinese folk musicians and like Irish folk musicians, and the whole show was about like railroads that like had been built like in America and also like in other countries, kind of like facilitated by colonial powers. So it was kind of showcasing like the like music that was actually being made by people that were building the railroads.
So I feel
like like talking about like country music, like it's so, there's so much like storytelling involved. And like, I mean, after like Sinners came out, I kind of was like,
wait, like, did you end up seeing it?
I did see, I saw Sinners in theaters. And I know it is like a like mainstream movie and whatever. but like, it was just kind of awesome to see like, like this narrative about like how music is a way to like transcend like past, present, future, and how it contains so much storytelling and like suffering, but also hope. But yeah, kind of a tangent, but like music is poetry.
Not for like, real.
Poetry is music, and the narratives that like rap and poetry hold are so important.
Yeah, I think, yeah, song, like, a poem is a song, a poem is, like, a spell, a poem is, like, instruction, like, all of those things, and this, like, conversation about, like, loving songs, like, songs are so great, and like music is so great for the fact that like I think they're the most like accessible form of art, in a way that it's just like circulatory, you know, like I love how a song viralizes itself and there's like words in there, you know, like it's great that like X amount of people just know the set of words, you know, like I feel like that's why it's like, yeah, like sound is effective. Like words are effective if you let them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm thinking also of like the moments in organizing where we've used music and art and poetry especially. I mean, I think back to the roots of when I started, you know, working in this way for like the community. And you know, it was really the climate movement at first for me, but I think I was doing a lot of like climate related art and music. And I think at least in those spaces, there was a very big acknowledgement of like, especially being young, what is our power? What can we even like share with people? And, you know, it came down to like we pasting poetry around and hoping that people, not even, you know, it's not to lead to a QR code, it's not to lead to a website, but really just to like put up there for people to read, and all poetry that like, you know, related to the anxiety of like, you know, thinking about climate change and the realities of like loving somebody and being with people and like wanting children, for example, you know, in like this type of world. I don't know, just thinking about even like in the roots of when I was doing this work for the beginning, like art was the root of that, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I think the first poem I ever wrote at like 10 years old was like about like,
10 years old, fuck this capitalist system.
I just remember it was about like trees being cut down, and it was like so devastating. 10, like... Yeah, I remember like doing a reading of it, and like being like, damn, I'm like sniffling and like feeling so emotional. But like, I think as a kid, like when you approach like these really serious topics that honestly as like a young child, you're like, oh my god, I'm like born not into this world. Born into this world that like, what the hell is going on here? Like, I don't think I'll ever see what, you know, the generations before me saw. But I think like art is a way, is such a good entry point and honestly just a way to support humanity as we become aware.
Well, it's a moment of community. You know, I'm thinking about like the times where we've been out on the streets and being like, word, now people are singing. Yeah. Like, suddenly there's a guitar.
Yeah.
And people are singing, and now like it makes everything a tiny bit easier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, like you're still at risk, you're still out there, it's cold, whatever, you're doing something that like you're scared, you know, all these things, and like now there's music, and at least for a moment, it is like a community bonding event. You know, it becomes like something to like center yourself around and really be like in the moment with somebody and present in that space, I think, and like holding the space as well.
The amount of times that like music has like protected people in a protest, like I feel like I've seen it like legit, like literally physically protect people just like the presence of music. And it like the amount of times that I feel like it's kept me sane, like in a march is like I can't even count how many times, but I think, I mean, that was my favorite thing to witness, like in like the widespread like school encampments was like how many of like the student musicians and just musicians in general like came out to like start like a circle of just like improvising music, or they would have like a cellist would just show up and start playing cello, and it would just be like, this is amazing, and we're all just like sitting with each other, feeling our emotions, just like listening to beautiful music, and just like all the drumming and stuff, like so grounding. But
yeah, no, I love to see the saxophone out and the cello. Like, it was so awesome. I think it just, I think having music at really emotionally intense spaces like that, like, it just, it does calm me down. It also just feels like, I don't know, it's like the pulse of the gathering.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like I'm even thinking about like Radio Alhajera, you know, and like the work that they do and the music that they put out, or not put out, but like are mixing, and just how much, like, you know, there was a article about them in Crack Magazine recently that was talking about like how much that sonic space is resistance and basically just like, you know, yeah, how people coming together to like share this music and share kind of content that transcends form almost, you know, like it's not just music, it's also just like sound in itself, noise, and how is that moving around, like what is that creating, and the tensions, and you know, all these things. And yeah, just thinking about, I don't know, just yeah, if we're thinking about what we're growing all together, there's so much work to be done, and so many times where it can feel so fucking overwhelming to be like, what am I doing next? Like, what role am I playing here? You know, like, what is my capacity? What are my skills? And even being able to like consider art and music something that you can bring to the table is super important. Or like poetry, you know, like there's gonna need to be people obviously doing like the really intense stuff. And there's gonna be need to be people who are like calming everybody down at the end of the day.
Yeah.
You know? And like, yeah, again, like different roles we've spoken to before. Yeah,
it's like community care is like kind of a like intangible role because it takes form in so many ways. Like it could be someone that's like doing jail support. It could be someone also that's just like showing up and like making sure that everyone has like, I guess, a lullaby to listen to when they're like freaking out. And like it looks different and there's different like skills that everybody has. And it was also awesome to see, and still to see like today, like people kind of cross teaching each other like these skills. Like, someone teaching like an organizer who's never touched like a trumpet, like how to like blow a note or something. And then like like teaching them like other skills, like how do you signal or something. Like there's just like these awesome connections that are made kind of really randomly, but I realized that I actually wanted, I actually wanted to give time, Boots, I know you have like a couple poems you wanted to read as well, so I wanted to give you a chance to like also share those and talk a little bit more about like your connection to them. But like also along the lines of like everything we've been talking about. But
I think a poem that I wanted to share was this poem called Obligations 2. It's by Layli Long Soldier. If you're listening and you have access to like phone or something, like visually, this poem is really important to me. Like it's such a cool way to structure a poem. But yeah, Layli Long Soldier is a poet. She's awesome. One of her books is called Whereas We Respond. She's a citizen of the Oglala Nation, Lakota Nation, and she lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico. This person is awesome, and Obligations is a kind of really unique poem because it can be read in a lot of different ways. It's sort of like a diamond-shaped poem, and you can follow the words as you go down, and you'll have like a different iteration every time. I'm gonna choose one of those iterations. Let's see. As we resist the past, we fail to question the grief we bury as ash across our faces. So that's an example of an iteration that you can go down to. But I really love this poem, kind of overlapping reasons as to why I love the other June Jordan poem, the tree one, because it really does confront like tenses. It confronts like a future tense. and also kind of like melts past, present, and future. Because I feel like that's, I don't know, I think organizing is a kind of really humbling and enriching kind of work, because you really do just have to have like egos down and be ready to receive, you know, and be ready to like change your fixed notions. And I feel like this poem is like really representative of that. I don't know. How do you guys feel about this poem?
Yeah, I mean, looking at it, like there's like probably like 100 different.
Exactly.
Like, like literally more than 100 different variations that you can do, which feels like kind of like weaving together like a mantra. And I also love like that there's a part that's just like the grief.
Exactly.
Like it no matter what happens, you're going to go through the grief.
Yeah.
Which I think is really real. Just in general, like thinking about organizing, thinking about like community work, like there is going to be a lot of grief that comes up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just really trying to look at it more.
Yeah,
I think it's interesting, you know. I like the line below that. It's like we shift, we wield, kind of looking at that and thinking, you know, it feels almost like a back and forth, you know, like we're, yeah, kind of like, you know, two steps forward, one step back. And I feel like that's also a lot of how organizing feels a lot of the times. Of, you know, making progress and then realizing like, yeah, there is this grief, there's this sadness, there's the like just sheer difficulty of shifting things around. And yeah, it's not this like direct, like we're moving this, you know, like we're it's different acts that all come together to make change. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It's like a web of verbs. It's like a web of verbs. Like a web of tenses. It's like a great structure and shape to kind of visualize like what like collective struggle looks like and collective organizing. I don't know, I love this poem. I feel like every person should read this poem. Because I feel like you can do like however many like iterations you can.
I also had a question prepared for you, Boots, like pertaining to like the themes that you work. And I know right now you're doing like a lot of research about like grief, and like writing and also somatic practices, so I was curious like if you wanted to like kind of share a little bit about like why that's significant to you.
I consider myself a person who grieves a lot and like quite constantly, and that is like that does not happen in isolation a lot of the times. So I think I have been doing a lot of research on loss and have been trying to articulate my grief and like what I do with it, but yeah, I feel like there's no like neat way to articulate it, so poetry has been really helpful to kind of process through grief, especially kind of, you know, ambiguous loss that I think everyone is facing. And it just, poetry is a really good tool to kind of try to untangle that, but also try to feel it out and be illiterate and be nonsensical and be irrational and be shifty with your tenses, you know. I do these things called floor poems. It's literally in the name. It's you get down on the floor and whatever writing device you have or tool, you just kind of have like paper on the floor and you write like near the ground, horizontally, shifting, turning, like you're not going to be in the same place if you have that big of a scale to move and to have space to words like that. So those floor poems feel a lot like rituals to me, and in that I do them quite often. And they help me feel in my body a lot more. And I have a lot of friends, and I have a little brother actually who I've asked to do this with me, and he was like, "What?" but he was like, "You want me to roll around on the ground?" And I was like, "I mean, yeah, like if you want to, you know." And then he ended up really liking it. And it was really nice to kind of step back and be like, oh, this was the shape of this sentence. This was like the way my body was moving. It was like a trace of what my body was moving. These were little marks that I was thinking of as I was moving through the paper. Like we both took a step back and kind of realized the shape of whatever it was that we were feeling, thinking, moving through on the paper. Yeah, I think floor poetry is something that I'm really interested in sharing more. It doesn't feel like a private practice. It just kind of feels like something that a lot of people can do collectively, individually, separately, but together. But yeah, I think, I don't know if that answers your question, but yeah, in relation to the grief that we're talking about from the poem.
Yeah, totally. I just wanted to kind of hear more about like this practice, because I know that we've talked about it a little bit, just like hanging out as friends. But I feel like also recently, like I've been thinking a lot about like grief and like the different ways that it shows up. Kind of just thinking about like my lineage and just like what you do with that when you're like organizing for a better future, and like how you speculate on like a lost life or a lost movement, or like lost momentum. And I think it's connected a lot with like a lot of the poets that I've been reading recently. Like June Jordan talks a lot about grief. But also combines it with so much love. So it kind of like, it feels like so overwhelming to think of grief as like a negative thing. But like the way that like it shows up like on paper, whether it's like with June Jordan or like the poems that I read from you, Boots, like it's not like a negative emotion. It's just like actually something really beautiful that we experience.
Yeah, I think I've been also thinking about grief, but maybe in through a bit of a different lens, where I've been talking about it a lot with like harm reduction people. And yeah, kind of this idea of, you know, we're working in a, not a field, but like in working with each other in a way that we are not saying like, don't do this, right? Like, don't do these drugs, don't take this risk, don't whatever. But like, how can we minimize, yeah, the risk and the harm, or at least be aware of the risk and minimize the harm. And in that also just like, yeah, there's constant grief. And also I think with a lot of people who take substances or feel maybe or like who are isolated because of their substance use, there's this idea of like, yeah, grieving the life that you think you could have, grieving like the person you think you might have been before or after substances, grieving like the experience of, you know, that change in reality for a brief second. I think a lot of it, and also just like grieving the fact that so many people are lost in substance use, and, you know, the grieving the people we also like grieving people who are alive, right? And like grieving things that are still existing, even in like all the work that we do in organizing, there's also this sense of like grieving work that doesn't not go anywhere, maybe doesn't attain the goals that we wanted it to. And like work that like when we put so much work and energy and connection and time and effort and just like devote ourselves to something for a while and then doesn't turn out how we want it to, or like doesn't change systems the way we thought it would. Yeah, it's a lot of grief in that situation, like grieving the moment, as you said, the momentum that we had, or what it could have been, or the possibilities that like the realities that we were imagining in our heads that could have been but are not. Yeah, I think that's a lot of like just thinking about that and the work that we do, and like how do we, as you said, hold that within ourselves and at the same time like make space for like keeping going, basically. But it's hard. It's hard to like constantly be dealing with like the thoughts and the memories of like everything we've worked on that like maybe hasn't worked out, or people we've worked with that aren't here anymore, things like that.
Yeah, totally. Like the list that you kind of spoke out, like, yeah, like I agree, like grief has a lot of faces. And what Sasa was saying too about grief is not like a negative thing, but I think grief is just, I think it's like absolutely like necessary, you know? It's also something that is like
just
reorients us to kind of look at different social issues in a way that we're kind of like centering like our wellness, like kind of centering like, oh, okay, like I need you to live for me to live and for them to live and for us to live, you know? Yeah, grief is kind of any iteration of loss.
And I think it's also something that like allows us to care, you know? Like it shows that we care. It shows that we're deeply invested in like what we're doing and the relationships that we're building. And that, yeah, it's always going to be a factor. Like there's always going to be loss, but yeah, reframing it to be this thing where it's like, you know, even sometimes I think about this when I'm talking about like just like romantic relationships with people, and this idea of like, are you getting in a relationship with someone because you want it to last the longest and be forever and like be the best thing that's ever happened to you for this amount of time? Or do you want to like get in it and be able to tell yourself that like even if it ends, you spent a good amount of time with somebody that you loved in connection, you know? And like the ability to like lose that and still be like, no, that was good, like that was a significant part of my experience and my life, and I'm glad it happened, even if it's over.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think that, and Boots, you know this, but I feel like there, like we've seen so much heartbreak happen this year, in different ways. Like,
I know this.
Heartbreak was fucking crazy this year.
That was, yeah, like back to back, brother. Like,
like for everything. Yeah. Man, like romantic relationships, like just like opportunities and like
projects
and like friendships and like reminiscing on things and feeling the heartbreak through that. And like just learning how to mitigate those feelings and how they show up.
And how to communicate it with people also, you know.
Yeah. It's really good to name our grief. Like as I said about the constant feeling of like ambiguous loss. Like I think if we name our grief, like we just get real specific with it, and it's really important, you know. Like a lot of the reasons why folks die is not arbitrary. So to name grief, you know, to name genocide, to name like improper healthcare, like that's naming grief.
And even I think I'm thinking about like disability too, you know, like grieving, especially like now I think about long COVID and the amount of people that just became disabled and are now probably like extremely disoriented and living a completely different lifestyle than they were for something that could have been completely asymptomatic and like quote unquote out of the blue for them. And yeah, just kind of how like that even in itself is just like such a huge process of grieving, like the bodily experience of like complete ability, you know, and all these things. And it's like, it takes a long time to be able to like accept and integrate this new reality. But yeah, just naming it and being able to be like, this is what I'm missing, you know, and that like you're allowed to miss it and also be proud of being disabled, you know, like all these like contradictions that we view as contradictions, but that really are not. And that like shows that just like grief is just like really part of the process of integrating the reality of what's happening to you. And then being able to communicate that with others in a way that, like, it's so universally relatable. And that's what allows these poems to be so meaningful to people as well.
Yeah, that was really beautiful.
I'm with bars. Like.
Yeah. I feel like we could have a whole, like, I guess, I don't know if to call it an episode or something. Yeah. But, like, just, like, talking about grief, it feels really cathartic to talk about it and name it.
Exactly. Have y'all read Ocean Vuong?
Yes.
Like, what I've been thinking about this whole conversation.
Yeah.
And just like the way that he names grief and works with it.
Yeah.
Puts language to it is just so, so heartbreaking and amazing and relatable.
Yeah.
And just thinking about that as like poetry as well, you know.
I think literally when me and Boots first met, like I think like one of our first interactions, like you gave me like an ocean, like On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous, and that like literally changed my life. And I think that's like also the basis of like, I feel like our friendship.
That's entirely like the description of our friendship.
Man. Yeah, it's literally like On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous.
Yeah.
I feel like that should be like required reading for like the whole world.
Literally.
Yeah.
And have you read the new one?
No,
I'm actually getting through it right now.
Really? Wait, I want to talk to you about it. I haven't. I'm waiting for the soft cover.
This is The Emperor of Gladness. It actually goes much more into like addiction and community and building like relationships, especially in New England, and loss and all. Yeah, like really the topics that we're talking about is what's touched on in a way that's more fictional than the previous novel. Which is also making it a bit harder to get through maybe for me because it's not immediately as like, it's not as poetic, not like, you know, it is extremely poetic, but like in its actual form, it is more of like, you know, a novel and a fiction story. But it's, extremely relatable and talking about all these things. And I think something that I really like about Ocean Vuong also is like how dedicated he is to like social movements and, you know, saying like, don't buy from these corporations to buy my books, like support independent bookstores and places and community efforts. And it feels good to like have somebody that's like so good at writing that we can read and relate to that also like cares about what we care about.
Yeah, it's amazing to see. And I think when I like, that was the first book I ever read with like by a Vietnamese author. And like, not that our experiences are like the same, but like, having it's just like it was crazy to read like
a Vietnamese queer person
Vietnamese queer writer's work with like very similar like experiences and like the level of like grief in it, but like it's so beautiful.
Wait, can I just name, is this a fully Asian broadcast we're having?
This is a fully fully
this one is
Asian.
For the books.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Shout out Southeast Asia.
Literally. Yes. Let's fucking go. LFG.
Yeah, we can totally have a whole episode about grief and Southeast Asia.
Oh, yeah.
Honestly,
two
guys,
headlines.
Like in the Ocean Vuong readings, just like read
seriously.
It on air. Like, this should be definitely, this is something to think about.
Maybe
and
we
plan.
Can get him on
Moth Radio. Yo. Got the connect. Yo, Ocean up in here.
Yeah. okay, we have 2 minutes left. I want to make sure you get any closing comments out, anything you're thinking about.
Yeah. Well, I'm just feeling really grateful right now to be, like, to have had this conversation with you guys, and I feel like this isn't, like, we're closing the book on this.
Yeah.
I feel like this is...
We're just opening
the
book right now.
Yeah, we're opening
the
book right now.
The book is open.
The book has been opened. It's, like, I feel like it's in like a Pixar movie when there's like a floating pen or something. It's like Once Upon a Time. Sorry, that was just the visual I was having. But
I see it.
Yeah. You see the vision.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just wanted to, you know, share my thanks to both of you, Croak and you. Boots. I feel like this is a really beautiful conversation. I'm so grateful to be on air with Moss. If you guys have like closing thoughts as well.
No, yeah, ditto. I'm very happy to be on Moss, and it's just, yeah, I'm really excited. I'm excited for more and like what this kind of space can offer like a lot of people. Yes. Yeah, this was really fun. Like,
I guess I'll just say you've been listening to Moss Radio on mossradio.com. Yeah, I think it's really important to us to have people, like, as we grow and have more people listening in and more people on this broadcast to, like, yeah, get people engaging and, like, thinking with us. So if there have been any reactions to this content, please reach out to us at all the aforementioned places, and you can find the Contact Us page on our website.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, everybody.
And congrats.
And Moss congrats. Radio.
Moss Radio.
First broadcast.
Yeah.
All right. And one, two, bye. Three. We are off. Bye.